Hey, Bobby Manning here, and welcome to another edition of Dome Theory. We got Lindo, we got Anthony Vasquez, and we got Josue Pavone stopping by for a special appearance. And
it was good.
Good day to do it, Josue. We talked about a little bit at the end of the Garden Report last night, this verse that broke the rap world for a couple of days here, and people still talking about it, Kendrick's verse on the new Future album. So we're going to talk about that. We've been talking about it all week in the group chat, as a group chat edition of Dome Theory. And we'll start with Lindo. What do you make of this, Lindo? What do you make of what it's done for, you know, the dialogue this week around the big three here, as Kendrick referred to it as? And we had a funny discussion about that last night. But just, what do you think of the verse? What do you think of the disses? What do you think of, I know you sent the funny Photoshop last night of, besides just aligning now
the Avengers
around Kendrick and Drake. So what do you make of all this?
Well, first, I do want to say Pusha T already said that line. And I love Kendrick, but Pusha T already said, all I see top, they holler in top five, I only see top me. He already said that.
Top me. Yeah, that's a good call. Yeah, great call.
But
which is fitting,
in terms
right?
of this.
Yeah, okay.
In terms of this, what people have been doing for the last few days is they're digging through, because Kanye had said a few months ago, or maybe a year ago, last time he was on Drink Champs, he said, Drake will send shots at you that only you know. No one else knows, only you know. So now people are digging through First Person Shooter for saying, when J. Cole says they want an office, is he saying that he wants an office, and pointing back to the old cover of from Kendrick Lamar where they're outside the White House? You know, they're trying to piece together all kinds of stuff. I love Kendrick. His who he is solidified, but it is funny that he comes in every few years to do this. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. He's not out there laying the groundwork all the time, and not that he has to. His work is already established. His work is already immortal in rap, so he doesn't have to. But it is funny that, you know, Cole and Drake are doing this stuff all the time, and it's like Kendrick puts out that experimental album a couple years ago. And before that, it had been a while. So a real album from Kendrick hasn't been there for a while. And then he comes out with this. So it's just like, you know, is it him putting this out? Is he responding to something? I don't know. All I know is J. Cole couldn't beat No Name in beef. And some random idiots are still thinking that Drake beat Push in beef from years ago. So I don't know. I don't believe in either of them. Someone's going to say something back publicly. Or Drake, I don't know what it's going to be. One of them is going to do something public, so we know. But in terms of what we don't know, it's probably been all over the place for a little while now.
Joe Sway, what do you make of it?
Yeah, man, that's a great, I mean, that's a good point. See, what I make of it is the way those two went back and forth. You know, it was kind of like, oh, We're on the same level. The Spider-Man meme is me looking at Drake, and then all of a sudden it's like, we're part of the big three. So the way I look at it as Kendrick was just like, wait a minute, like, don't loop me in with you guys. Like, I'm on another level, first of all. And then second of all, the way I took the verse was like, if we're talking about body of work and all that, you know, if we're talking about, if you really want to compare us all, like, your work has been pretty light there, Drake. And that's the way I saw it from Kendrick's perspective, right? So it's like, man, if you're going to even loop me in here, like, keep Drake away from it. Because in my opinion, and I'm speaking as if, you know, from Kendrick's perspective, right? My body of work is better. And I mean, I take 3 or 4 years for a reason, you know, and I always see Kendrick as that type. But I love this for hip hop because I think all three of these guys bring something different to the game. All three of these guys are super talented. So, you know, that spirit of competition, I love it. That's that's a big part of rap culture, you know? So this is great. Everyone's talking about it. The buzz is up, and it's not just, you know, some everyday rappers or, you know, people just calling each other out. No, these are three really talented guys. But the way I looked at the verse was just like, hey, man, every once in a while, you know, I got to remind everybody, and here I go again. Like, hey, I heard what you said earlier, and I appreciate that, man. Like, don't just lump me in there, you know, with you two, where I really put a lot of time and work into this. And I don't think it was necessarily just, you know, oh, well, J. Cole is the same way as Drake or whatever. But I just feel like when you really dissect Kendrick's verse, there's a lot of like, hey, you guys are over there, but I'm over here. Like, don't try to get me, you know, don't try to make it sound as if we're all on the same level and that I'm supposed to just at some point, you know, not give up. What am I trying to say? Just trying to just give into that. Oh, okay, yeah, yeah, I agree, guys. And I'll just keep making my, like, yeah, I'm doing a concept album. I put that body of work out there for the culture, something different. But don't get it twisted. I can get right back into this. And I think this is exactly what Kendrick is doing. Is it lining up for an album? Is it lining up for something to come kind of release in the future? Maybe, possibly. I mean, eventually he's going to drop something. So I just think this is great for hip-hop, great for the culture. And Kendrick's way of saying, like, well, let's see what happens here. Let's see what kind of response we get from this. And either way, I'm going to, you know, I'll deliver something even. I got some more heat coming. You know, it really just woke everybody up, which is great. I love it. Maybe even wakes up Drake. I mean, I don't know if this thing was in the cards or not, but is he going on tour with Lil Wayne? Is that a one-night only thing? Is he trying to put the culture onto his history? You know, as people say, like the old Drake, like, hey, do I got to remind everybody? I don't know. Again, I don't know if that was something that was already planned or organized before this whole thing, before Kendrick spoke up. But I just think it's interesting that, you know, we're going to see Drake and Wayne online at some point through pictures and videos of this show.
You know, they say they miss the old Drake.
I haven't seen that old Drake in a minute.
Saying, man. And listen, I'm here for it, man. Like old Drake, first three albums, Drake, man. That's what I just feel like that's when he was still fighting to prove himself. And it's been a while since we had that type of body of work from Drake. Let's put it that way, I guess.
Yeah, and he's put some interesting stuff out there, Vasquez. We talked a little bit about the 21 collab. We both were cringing a little bit at some of the lines there, and that's always how it's going to go with him. And it's been inconsistent for him.
Yeah. So
it's stemming from a place, and this is what excites people, where, you know, early 2010s, they're all kind of coming up. They're all racing ahead. They're all putting out their big albums when they first started. But over time, this is what frustrates me most about the conversation here. Kendrick separated himself. And I think that's pretty clear in the body of the work. I think it's clear in the, you know, reviews and awards and everything that they've received over the years. And now in 2024, we're going to talk like
how we describe this. We don't use Pulitzers to describe who's the best.
That's true. Yeah, man. Yeah. Like, that's the thing.
It doesn't matter how you put it, though. I think you. This is what's going to drive me crazy.
How long did it take Drake to get a Grammy? We don't judge who's the best on Grammys. That's not how it goes.
Yeah.
I don't care what metric you're using. And, of course, sales and everything else are going to point in Drake's direction. But I think it's just so hard to build a case that Drake's better in any sense than Kendrick. And so for this to be talked about, like, it's like, oh, one and two, neck and neck, their careers are right next to each other's, and, you know, they're the two fighting for the top. That's just not how I see it, Vasquez.
Yeah.
No, it's definitely not how I see it at all. But you know what? Rap beef keeps the game alive. And, you know, Kendrick is known for not releasing a lot, but when he comes out, it's relevant. So, you know, I think this is going to be a peak era for the rap game. And, you know, we'll see how it goes from there.
Is this going to continue, Linda?
Like I said, they're going to do something back. You know, Drake responded to Meek, and he responded. I know everyone remembers to Meek, but Drake responded to Pusha too. So Drake does respond to people.
Not as good
as what goes at him. And I guess he ended up beating Meek, and then now Meek even wears OVO stuff. So I guess, you know, he takes the win there. But no, I definitely think someone's going to say, look, J. Cole responded to No Name, and it wasn't really good. No Name said, you don't read. And he told No Name, you're right, so put me on some books. You know what I mean? Like, that didn't work out. So something is going to be responded. Who knows? But yeah, it is funny, though, that now there's stuff. Future and Drake are fighting over this girl, and The Weeknd is humming on the song. And it's like, all these people that were involved with Drake, they're all like, no, I'm over here now. Kanye, he was on stage battling with Drake, right? Kanye was like, let me play my hits. Drake was like, let me play my new stuff. And everyone's like, oh, we're going with Kanye. So that was the last time we saw him. They're on stage together. Now Kanye's going back and saying, you know, F Drake and all this. And Drake posting, you know, why are you bringing me up? Why am I in this? Right. You know, so I don't know. It's going to be funny. Whoever posts next. We'll see if it's Kanye. What if Kanye takes a side? That's what we're all waiting for.
I think we know what Avengers side take.
It's really the Avengers Endgame.
I've never seen Kanye and Kendrick in any sense. Oh, Party, no more parties in LA.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Which Kendrick spazzed on. Yeah, that was a good song.
Yeah. What do you expect the next show, Sway?
Drake's got to say something, man. I just hope he comes with it. I just wonder what direction he's going to go in, because this whole, like, does this change Drake? Hopefully it's not just like, oh, he makes a good diss track and then gets back to the norm, you know? What's going to be his new thing here, man? This whole, like, I got all these girls on my phone and I know I do this and that every day. Like, it's getting old, man. Like, I don't know. I feel like he needs, like, a new shtick or something. I just think that
he tried Joe Sway with the electronic album and everyone hated it.
That's true.
But he's a rapper, so I'm going to say.
Yeah, I just think he has to get back to the fire verses that he used to have. You know what I mean? Like when he was really trying to prove himself, you know, before the Jay-Z co-sign, before, you know, essentially being named the face of hip hop, you know, I just feel like once he got that crown, he didn't come with the same type of hunger, or at least he didn't come with the same type of bars. You know, I just think that's really what it boils down to. And I feel like Kendrick's has always been from afar being like, y'all still on this Drake thing? Okay, all right. But that never stopped him from doing what he wants to do, right? So he's doing what he wants to do. He put out that concept album, Therapy, you know, talking about heavy stuff that rap hasn't really seen before. And I think it was a really important step. But, you know, he's like, hey, listen, I can still get in here and remind everybody I'm the best rapper alive. So look, you wanna throw me into that three-way tie? Like, absolutely not. I'll gun for the top and I'll prove to everyone, because I want to see who can out rap me or at least try to put me in the crossfire, and let's see what happens. So I love that Kendrick's doing this, man, because it's putting everybody on notice, obviously, but also it's putting Drake and J. Cole on the spot. It's like, what are you going to do now? What are you going to say about this? And especially J. Cole. I wonder, how do you handle this if you're Cole, right? Drake, I know, is going to find some kind of way to respond. But Cole, I wonder what happens with him.
And two things to that. The first one is Drake put out an experimental album, and everyone was like, that was terrible.
That's
Kendrick
not what
puts out an experimental that, album, and it's like the highest touring whatever. I wasn't a fan of it, but gets the most touring. And then on top of that, you know, and you're saying someone needs to say, Drake, you need the new thing. Well, Joe Budden told him, hey, the album was all right, but we want, you know, you're 36, 7, however old he is. You know, it's time for you to do some new stuff. Right. And Drake launched a, you know, two-paragraph response talking about you could only get 50 dudes in dirty and niche jeans.
That's right. Listening to you.
Used music. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So he said, this is the blueprint for failure, you know, whatever. So, people can't really tell Drake you got to do something new, because he gets like that. So, yeah.
Topically, he just seems very spiteful, like angry. And that's where I think he fell flat on the last album. Like, you know, complaining about the girls, the misogyny at certain points, I think, like, came off kind of.
That's a good point.
Now, Drake, you got a baby mom. You got to, you know. Rap about being a baby, but you know what? If he puts out a 4-4-4, people hate that too. So,
yeah, you know what? Maybe Pusher ruined his initial plan. His initial plan was going to fatherhood, and like he had this whole thing planned out. And Pusher, you know, obviously when he got into when he dissed him and all that, and pretty much told the world that he has a son before Drake did. Maybe that ruined it. That scrapped his plan, and now he tried with the dance album, which I feel like he thought was gonna be the response.
I still commend him for that. It was a little something different.
Yeah, but try something different. But it's like, man, you really dumbed down the lyrics. You watered them down.
Oh,
you
know, the singing so bad.
Oh, man, Bad Bunny killed you on that track. Like, it was just like, man, like, you should have the best verse on your own album, or at least one of them.
That song was terrible.
Yeah,
awful.
It's an interesting time.
Nah, that song was amazing.
Vasquez is still
in part of it.
Yeah, no, I mean, it eventually wore on, but that's
after,
the thing, you know.
Bad Buddy Spaz, I like to turn it off. That
he sounds so silly with the accent and everything, too.
No, you're on the same record with the biggest artist in the world, and that's what you give us, man. Like, it was just so underwhelming.
And he didn't
honestly
sound
I think
that
I've heard
bad
this song
on
three
Mia.
Times in my life. What's up?
He didn't sound that bad on Mia either, so it was just weird how he came out to start that record. But
no, that was a smash. Yeah, Mia was that was a huge, huge record. And then it's like, man, it comes back around, and that's what you give us. Like,
on Kendrick, real quick, Vasquez, because I feel like he's in a weird spot too. Lindo mentioned it. The album sold great, toured great, well received generally, but I feel like not by everybody. Like there were a lot of windows out there who just heard it and were like, kind of boring. Like, you know, who's on there talking the whole time too? Kodak. Like some people weren't feeling that whole angle to it. And, you know, it's even been a while since that album came out now. So time goes on. There's a new generation now that I feel like probably isn't as big on Kendrick just because he hasn't been out there making hits, hasn't been doing features quite like this. And I feel like there's a time here where he might be growing stale to some younger people. And Drake, you know, for all the stuff we're talking about here, is still putting out very relevant songs, albums, doing huge numbers. So he's still someone I feel like, even for younger fans, who's super relevant here, Vasquez. But Kendrick's going to find what his new lane's going to be. And he might not care. He might just be in this new era where he's overseeing the label that he's starting and Baby Keem's career, and they're going to do their collaboration album, and he's just going to make music for himself, like, you know, Andre is or something like that. But this, to me, Vasquez, shows that he still cares about this mainstream race for the top, who's number one in the rap game, that kind of stuff. And that's encouraging, because we haven't really heard him quite rap like this for a little while. He's been fooling around, honestly, in his verses with Keem and everything.
Absolutely. But I mean, you know, it sells. Like, you know, he doesn't need to release a lot of stuff. He doesn't need to release a lot of relevant stuff. You know, he has his background already. He has his resume. Mm-hmm. I mean, at some point you get too big to fail. So
he's proven what he needs to prove. So it's just interesting that he came out and made this statement. So we will see where it goes. We're going to let Lindo go in just a couple minutes here, but I didn't want to get his thoughts on Shohei Ohtani and this whole controversy. It's going to get big. It's going to, I think, expand beyond what we know now. Even within the last couple days here, we've heard that the biography on Ipe here, the translator, who has been fired by the Dodgers for an alleged stolen money wire transfer from Ohtani, millions and millions of dollars, I believe 4.5, to cover gambling debt, that initially in an interview with ESPN, he said Shohei sent to him to cover the debt, and then they ran back on that story, it seems like, because that could have, you know, implicate Ohtani in a some kind of fashion here. So listen, Lindo, there's a lot of theories out there. Is Shohei doing the gambling? Is this something that was paying off the debt of a friend, of a close colleague here, and they had to backtrack on that and change the story and essentially make this interpreter the fall guy? Those are the two big theories right now. It's really tough to accept the story on the surface right now that this interpreter just stole $4 million from Shohei Ohtani and sent it right over to a bookie.
You know, and yeah, you're right. I got some audits to look over right now. But, you know, I don't care what they say. I don't care what comes out. I don't know. I understand that now that the MLB is going to investigate. So now it is relevant. But I don't care what is said. Ipe is his fall guy. I don't care what goes on. This is a guy who he decided, Chris Carter did a talk to young players a long time ago. And he said, if you're going to be a star, one of your boys has to be the fall guy. If you're a star and you're going to keep being in the streets, one of them has to be the fall guy.
And that was the last time he spoke in that program. Yeah. But no, go ahead.
now they're talking about he didn't even go to UC Riverside, and he made up working for the Red Sox, you know, all this stuff. And someone online said, we're three stories away from learning Ipe doesn't even speak Japanese, you know. So to me, that Shohei was gambling, got in too deep, and he's got money, right? He's
you
got
really money. Think that's what yeah. happened, Lindo?
He got in.
I mean, he's deep, a close friend of him, isn't he?
He said, Ipe, hold this money for me, and we're gonna say you, because Ipe's getting paid after this. Ipe's gonna retire nicely, all right? Unless they go steroid era and put him before Congress. Ipe is going to get out of this picture, right?
Because how much time are you looking at for wire fraud?
2 years. Yeah.
All right. He'll get through that.
Shohei's not taking that. Not after this deal. He's not voiding $600 million. And I know there was the report before that people took from an old, is it Ken Rosenthal, tweet where he had said, you know, if certain members of the Dodgers are fired, then Shohei can back out. They tried to bring that back up, and then they clarified and said, Ipe doesn't count. Like, it, so There's so much going on. To me, Ipe is the guy who they said, if we blame this all on Ipe, no one will care, right? The story will go away. The problem is, too much stuff doesn't add up. There's no way you would give him the money from your account, like, and there's no way that Ipe would steal the money. Like, again, we said it last night, and I'll say it in a much more composed manner, but there's no way. What did Ipe do? He called up the bank and said, hey, this is Shohei. Give me the money. And they're like, oh, sure, we believe it. You're Shohei. We'll give you the money. No. Too many things just don't add up right now. We'll see what the investigation turns up, but I would put money on it, Bobby. I know we were talking about it earlier. I would go in on, I'm not a gambler, I would put money on it that Shohei is not going to be implicated. Shohei will not do real, they're not going to report this to the authorities on him. He may get some kind of suspension just for how they frame how he dealt this money out to Ipe and Ipe's control over it. However they, you know, dice that up, Shohei will be playing this year. And Shohei will be making his money in whatever it is, 2030, 2035. He will be getting his money. So we already know that's how it's going to add up.
Yeah, and he is Lindo Zay. We'll let him go here and keep the conversation going. Thanks for joining us here, Lindo. What do you make of this story, Joe Sway?
Ah, man. There's got to be moving parts of this thing. I just don't understand why there wasn't a third party involved. Just sort of like, I don't know, man, because this whole thing just doesn't make, like, for him to co-sign, unless he just didn't understand like what kind of implication would go hand in hand with something like that, especially when you're handling gambling debts, and we don't know exactly if it's, you know, which sport or whatever. Like, I didn't even think about the sports gambling aspect until I dug deep. I mean, when the updates came up, and I'm like, man, I'm thinking casino, you know, that kind of debt, roulette or whatever. But like, for him to be even involved in something like this, it's really damaging in my
opinion. Illegal sports betting, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And like, that's when, you know, that's when things get really dicey. I just feel like there's a lot more to the story that we don't know. But to retract the initial report? I mean, or the initial statement to ESPN, and then all of a sudden it's
and
like,
that initial statement to ESPN seems like the most likely story, Vasquez, that he was sending money to pay for his interpreter's debts and then realized he couldn't do that without a penalty. And yeah, they backtracked on that and tried to change the story
here.
That's the part
that I'm believing here. And it seems like he's just trying to just save himself, obviously. And also in the mistake of trying to help out a friend, the way this whole thing's playing out, it just doesn't look good. Because who's to say that, you know, do you have inside information on this stuff? Were you involved in this? How much money were you getting in? Like, there's a lot of that's going to come out of this. And I'm sure he realized after the fact, or someone told him about it. And
As far as we know, he wasn't betting on baseball. Even the interpreter here, which really could have threatened Ohtani's career if that was the case. So we'll see what becomes of that aspect here. But the one thing we really don't know, even as it adds up now, even in the story that they're telling now, is how this interpreter who makes, you know, a couple hundred thousand a year was able to rack up $4 million in debt gambling. Right. Maybe the bookie knew that he had a line to Ohtani. Maybe, as many are, you know, insinuating here, it was Ohtani. And again, we don't know any of this right now, and I'm sure they're going to keep investigating, the journalists and everything else, Vasquez. But how do you see this playing out for Ohtani?
Honestly, for what it's worth, Ohtani is too big to the sport of baseball for them to suspend him. He'll get a slap on the wrist at most just for the implications involved. Because honestly, like you said, it seems most likely that Ipe did place those bets. And because the bookies knew he had a line to Ohtani as his interpreter, you know, they probably gave him that. And then I think the attorneys let him know, listen, that's kind of illegal. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, Ohtani's going to be okay. It's bad.
You think?
All I got to say is Pete Rose. Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's bad because it's you don't want the biggest player in the history of baseball, let's say the Babe Ruth of our modern era, to be implicated in gambling, especially with gambling being such a big thing about our culture now, FanDuel, DraftKings, you know, you name it, all of these platforms.
Right.
All I got to say, Pete Rose to the Hall of Fame at this point.
And that's nothing too bothering. I mean, this is a sport that is quote unquote dying, right? People saying like, man, the viewership is down, and every year they're trying to spice things up or trying to, you know, make it easier to watch as people, whatever it takes to get people to watch it. And then you had this story come out with your biggest slugger, two-time MVP, like two in the last 3 years. Like, it's going to be interesting to see how MLB handles this. And, you know, if the other, if people start coming forward, if we have a third party or someone comes forward saying they have some information about it, who's to say? I mean, who knows, right? I just wonder, like, if I hope he's not involved in this, because it's like, if you're giving out that type of money, you know, to cover bets, it makes one wonder, like, how were you involved in this, or is this something that, do you feel like it's part your fault for some reason?
How could you have no knowledge either, with it being your best friend who you spend every day with?
Or maybe you feel like you're at fault because you gave him an extra bonus. Maybe you shouldn't have, or you didn't know, you know, the kind of lifestyle this guy was living, or maybe you didn't know. Like, it's hard to say, you know.
Do you guys think that there's going to be fan pressures to suspend Ohtani for longer than what they would originally intend?
I mean, I think it's just going to come down to what the facts are. Like, if they're able to throw it under the bus because no more information comes out, they're going to do that, like you said, Vasquez. But if he's connected in any way, and with how much information there seems to be about his connection, I think we'll know before long, just through investigations and, you know, media reports and all that. That's where I think,
I mean,
he ends up suspended for a year.
A year? No, I mean, it seems more. I mean,
I think
they
that's
already
within the books when it comes to gambling.
Absolutely.
As of now, because they don't have more information.
Yeah, but he's Shohei Ohtani, and he's on the Los Angeles Dodgers. It's, you know, like any other sport, you want to protect the asset. So, you know, business comes first in the end.
The only other thing I got on this show, Sway, is that it did bring up a conversation about, you know, gambling, sports, how close they've become here. To me, I don't think this is a super relevant story to make a commentary on that, because people did this stuff with illegal bookies years before the sports legalized gambling, or the states legalized gambling and sports started making partnership with them and all this. And who knows what the relationship is between this just becoming more casual and open, and, you know, a guy like eBay starting to do it. Of course, he was doing it with an illegal bookie, so maybe it's something that even goes back before they legalized it. But I understand everybody talking about right now, are we going to see more stuff like this now that, you know, leagues and states and the country as a whole really have embraced gambling here?
Possibly. Possibly. I mean, it's just hard to imagine the two worlds not, you know what I mean, overlapping. Especially,
we've already seen guys suspended left and right, especially in football.
Right. Especially with how popular it is, you know, generationally speaking. Imagine 5, 6, 7 years from now. Like, kids who are in high school now, that's going to be so part of their culture, you know, part of sports culture, whether you're a diehard fan or not.
Even though you shouldn't be betting in high school.
Right, but I'm saying, like, when you're hearing about it now, as soon as you graduate, it's not going to be like, hey, be careful with this thing. Like, who's saying that right now? Maybe we'll get to those commercials. Maybe it'll be a whole, like, you know, like, campaign in the future. I mean, obviously, they're doing it for legal purposes, but there isn't a really, like, there aren't kids getting approached, and there isn't like a classroom. It's not a classroom setting saying like, hey guys, you know, stay away from betting. You know what I mean? Like the way they talked to us about like drugs and smoking, you know, smoking cigarettes, the way they scared us growing up. Like, they're not doing that, but maybe that happens. Maybe it gets to that point, you know, because it's so accessible, you know, as soon as you're able to legally. Right. So.
Vasquez, you got anything on that?
I, you know, without adding what was already stated at this point, I think, you know, gambling as a whole does need to be regulated a lot heavier, but access is always going to be there. And I think it's just a widely accepted part of our culture now. For what it's worth, it's one of those is what it is scenarios. Oh, yeah. It's never going to go be put back in the can. I mean, it's the same thing with, you know, the legalization of other things. It's the evolution of the culture.
Yeah, and I just never pictured it being this incessant, like in your face all the time, constant on broadcast, leagues partnering, the ability to even bet in arenas, like especially for you, Josue, you know, like when you were growing up, that probably was like unimaginable for you.
Oh man, especially with like, you know, well, I guess it kind of happened a while before me, but I don't know, like soon anyone brought up sports betting, the first name that anyone would say is Pete Rose. So it just seemed like the future of that being accepted was just like, there's no way. Like, I always envisioned it as, it's going to be like an underground thing, you know, and you know, maybe some states will allow it, but I never saw it.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, because it was so easy. Well, not easy, but I mean, the way the whole thing played out for someone like Pete Rose, it was just like, man, like, baseball can never, ever have something like that happen again. And I feel like the rest of the league were like, yeah, you know, we second that. And then it's just kind of like little by little. You know what it was that really helped it? I feel like it was sports, fantasy sports. Like, the way that took off, especially fantasy football and all that, I just think that it just made it inevitable. And here we are, you know? So I just feel like once they realized there was a market for it, and shit, there were people playing who weren't even sports fans. They're like, oh, wait a minute. Like, this is what we're looking for here. You know, like, remember, like, people's girlfriends winning fantasy leagues, and like, it was like, oh, you don't have to be that knowledgeable. You can still win money. You just have to do a little bit of research. And here we are, you know? So,
yeah. And everybody loves it.
I mean, the biggest concern is that you also don't want to question the integrity of the game as well. You know what I'm saying? I mean, if you look on Twitter or what is now X, you got fans interacting with players saying, you know, I got my parlay on you, you know, don't screw it up.
Yeah.
And, you know, it seems so, you know, kind-hearted and lighthearted and, you know, just in how it's said. But, you know, stuff like that on the underground is definitely
a huge concern. But it can get nasty,
too. Right, man.
Exactly. I mean, if you owe too much to a certain person, God forbid, you like the situation we have with Shohei, you know, we saw that with the Black Sox. And I think that's funny.
No, it's funny you say that because, no, literally what I was going to say was, I remember, and this is one of my favorite, well, there's so many now, but like at the time, one of my favorites, it was a 30 for 30 on the Boston College basketball with all that. I had heard like a little bit about it, but I didn't know the whole story and how, like, you know, mobsters were involved telling players to throw games and all that. And I'm like, what are they, the freaking Black Sox in Chicago back in the 1900s that I learned about in school? But hey, who's to say that something like that won't happen in the future? I put my money on that something like that would happen, whether it's in college.
I mean, think about it too.
Or in the league. Like, who's to say some player who's in high school now isn't going to say, hey, I can make a whole circuit and, you know, I can make sure that I get a cut and we throw four or five games here and there. You know what I mean? Like, four or five, some of the best players are in on it. Like, that book fascinated me when I first read it. Like, the Black Sox and then, you know, communication majors. We really spent a lot of time on it in one of our, like, intros to communication. Or maybe one of the early classes for freshman and sophomore year. And I'm like, man, I love that stuff. It was super fascinating. But, you know.
No, it's a great point. Like, even
it could easily happen again for sure.
Even Ohtani, like, I know he's making a ginormous amount of money in endorsements, and, you know, he's gonna make a ton of money with this contract down the line. But he's making what, Vasquez, like $2 million a year or something ridiculous because of the deferments.
Yeah, $2 million a year over the next 10 years. That deferment is so crazy, though.
If this was him, just $4 million in debt here. You know, that's, he could end up behind pretty quick on, you know, paying a bookie like this if this was what was going on. So that's the spiral that leagues want nothing to do with.
But the thing about it is that Ohtani in his endorsements alone makes about $50 million a year. And I think that's why he was so comfortable deferring as much money as he did, which, again, what incentive does he have betting $4.5 million? He must have had a really good parlay at that point, but I don't know. That's why it doesn't necessarily add up. But you know what they say. Money only makes you more of whatever you are.
This is a fascinating story. Yeah.
It is, man. Because who lends out that type of money unless you feel like, hey, I owe you one. Or, hey, man, I gave you a bad tip on that one. I don't know. Like, who's to say? And I'm not saying it was baseball related, but he must feel some sort of responsibility for it, or at least feel like an enabler, you know, for his gambling debts.
And again, the story as it is now, the interpreter just stole the money from Ohtani to pay for his own gambling debts, and he's been fired by the Dodgers. Again, really hard to imagine that's how this went down, but that's the information we got right now. I do want to wrap up the show here, getting you guys Celtics thoughts. Joe Sway and I were at Celtics-Bucks last Wednesday. The last, you know, relevant game for the Celtics. I'm about to head down to Atlanta Monday as this rolls out. This was an interesting game because it got close. The Bucks almost came back down big late. And looked like they can hang with the Celtics scoring even without Giannis. I don't know how much you caught this game, Vasquez, but the Bucks are playing right now as we record this. Looks like they're going to win. So Celtics will have to win on Monday to actually clinch the number one seed. But this game effectively put it away here, along with the 10-game lead that the Celtics had built since. The Bucks kind of destroyed them up in Milwaukee, and they'll play one more time then this year. But this, you know, with the Bucks getting a little bit more comfortable into Doc Rivers, with the Celtics racing out to the number one seed, looks like the odds-on favorite for the East Finals as the East stacks up here. Do you think the Bucks could really threaten the Celtics, Vasquez, or are they in a class of their own now?
I mean, by the numbers, it definitely seems as if the Celtics are in a class of their own. You know, being 10 games ahead is, you know, it's unbelievable. I don't think we've seen that in a few years.
It's been a while.
Absolutely. But you know what? I think, you know, the Celtics want to prove a point, especially after the last few years. So all that matters in the end is the postseason, because that's where the Celtics tend to fall short, whether it was in the finals against Golden State, whether it was last year against the Miami Heat. They're a very talented team, and they're also going to get very expensive soon once they have to re-sign Jason Tatum to $300+ million. On top of having Jaylen Brown on $300 million. As far as Dame is concerned, I don't trust him in the playoffs. But we'll see what happens.
Yeah, man. You know, going into this game, it was interesting because obviously not everyone had their the Bucks playing without Giannis. And I just felt like from the beginning, they obviously needed this game more than the Celtics. And whether that was a win or just a greedy performers, which is what they got, I think Doc Rivers has taken it. You know, he's like, man, this is great. You know, just look how close we were. We didn't even have Giannis, you know. That's how close we are. So I feel like that as a motivating factor is a big part of what Doc wanted to happen. But if you ask me, I just see the Celtics is just too dominant for these guys in the best of seven series. It'll be a great series. I think the Celtics, like, nothing about that game made me feel any different, I guess what I'm trying to say. But I see I see Doc's approach, you know, and that's what you got to do when you're a veteran coach. You have to look for ways to get these guys motivated and have them believe it. And he's a player's coach, you know, but until this team finds a way to really buckle down, you know, like in terms of like in a best of seven series and seeing how they can do defensively, you know, because we know that they can do it. You know, we know that they have that in their identity, but I just feel like the backcourt and what they lost in Jrue Holiday is really hurting them right now in terms of that defense and just who they used to be, you know, and I feel like Dame has put a big spot on Dame on that end of the floor. And, you know, at this stage of his career, I mean, he's not going to just turn into a lockdown defender. Let's be honest here. And I don't think that's something that Doc is hoping is going to happen, you know, so it's going to be a lot of, I think when it comes down to it, it's going to be leading onto a lot of like, maybe like head games and trying to get people, you know, trying to get themselves out of their game mentally. You know, Giannis obviously will be a big part in that. But, I mean, if we're talking about head-to-head as a team, I still like the Celtics favored over the Bucks. I mean, nothing about that game really changed that about me. I just feel like this final stretch, the Bucks are just reaching for any type of motivating thing that they can – any type of motivator that they can get. And, of course, that next matchup, the last one of the regular season, will be another one. We'll see if everyone plays, though. I don't know. I mean, look, the Celtics – they don't have to play everyone, but even if they were to take out at least one or two out of the starting five, I could see the Bucks playing everyone. You know, I don't think it'd be one of those games, or maybe not. Maybe Doc saves it. It's going to be interesting to see. I think it really boils down to the momentum they have between now and the end of the season, you know. But
yeah,
I mean, that doesn't mean the Bucks won't be there in Eastern Conference Finals. Like, these two teams, it just feels like they're going to meet. They are going to meet. And again, I still like the Celtics' chances.
I mean, Doc Rivers isn't necessarily known for adjustments, you know, across playoff series. So I think that's going to be a benefit for the Celtics. And it definitely helps that Jrue Holiday is on that team too now. And he might have the inside intel that we don't know.
Right.
Or that the Celtics didn't have originally. Absolutely.
Yeah, he's got the motivation too with Milwaukee having traded him.
Oh, yeah, for sure, man. And, you know, the way things played out and a lot of speculating that Giannis and Drew, you know, the relationship wasn't that great last year. And obviously the trade didn't help that. So I just think that's involved as well. But you wonder just how Doc is going to do this, you know, how he's going to pull this off. But if you're the Milwaukee Bucks, man, like the way the season's played out with Adrian Griffin and bringing Doc here. Like, I get it. You know, obviously the ties with Marquette. Obviously the last coach, you know, that I mean the last team I feel like that Doc was willing to step up. You know, I can't think of any other situation where Doc would come out of retirement and say, yeah, I want to coach.
Yeah, you could argue they're the third best team in the league. Them and the Clippers are kind of vying for that. And
right, but I mean, like, I can't see any other situation if there was a vacant spot that Doc would say, sign me up. You know what I mean? Like, Doc wants to coach a Giannis. Doc wants to bring a, you know, obviously a team that has a champion, you know, a championship roster, or at least a chance at it. So I just it made a lot of sense. It was just the chaotic atmosphere surrounding it, I feel like, just kind of hurt his chances. Can he run this thing back next year? I mean, there have to be changes to the roster and all that, but I just feel like it'll be an injustice. It wouldn't be fair if this thing plays out. Let's say they lose, and then they're like, all right, it didn't work, Doc. We'll try something else. You know, I hope that doesn't happen.
No, yeah, he's going to be back next year no matter what happens.
I was going to say, like, they got to bring that back at least one more time. However, you know, that's not how Milwaukee's going to feel. You know,
no, I mean, especially if you go down a first round, Miami's lurking, Philly's lurking, just like they are for the Celtics.
Yeah, it definitely doesn't help that Giannis's contract is expiring soon. So how much pressure is it going to be on Milwaukee to make a change, whatever that might look like, if they're unsuccessful? What if they don't even make the conference finals? What if they lose in the semifinals?
Yeah,
and they could. There are some teams out there, and their defensive vulnerability is what still gives me some skepticism about them being able to hang with the Celtics. That was evident in that game. Lillard just got beat at will. Malik Beasley, too. It's amazing he's a starter there, but that's the depth situation they have now after that Lillard trade. They can race, though, with points, and that's what put my antenna up a little bit. The crunch time, the fourth quarter, they looked in control there late. And almost put the Celtics on the verge of a second collapse in a span of weeks there after that Cavs won. So they did some good things. The zone, I thought Middleton looked great in this game as well. And Lopez is going to protect the rim and cause some trouble for Porzingis as well. So it's an intriguing matchup. I hope we see it. That series in 2022 was tremendous. Celtics had to come back down 3-2 in that one. And you know what Giannis is made of in the playoffs. He was hurt last year. I'm still not putting too much stock in what happened last postseason in terms of, you know, what he's capable of. So we'll see how that develops. Just about 10, 11 games left. We will have post-game coverage after the Hawks game on Monday here on the Garden Report. Joe Sway and the others joining us there. Anthony Vasquez, a regular here on Dome Theory. Thanks to him for joining us tonight, as well as Lindo Zay, who had to take off. Want to give a quick shout-out to our official daily fantasy sports partner here in Prize Picks. Head over to prizepicks.com/CLNS and get 100% matching bonus up to $100. Just pick more or less on two or more guys each night. It's a ton of fun. Head over there, check out the app, see what guys are going to do on any given night too. It's interesting to see what they have these guys laid at for points, rebounds, and all the rest going into these basketball, hockey games down the stretch here. Again, use that code CLNS to support Dome Theory, Garden Report, and the whole network here. They're our official daily fantasy sports partner, Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com/CLNS. And that's our episode of Dome Theory tonight. Get us wherever you get your podcasts on the audio side. And check us out right here on CLNS and Celtics All Access on YouTube. Talk to you guys next week.